Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Today we talk cameras and lenses, digital and film, with Brian Carlos. Brian's store manager for the camera company on Odana Road in Madison. Really pleased to have him with us. And their website is cameracompany.com, so that's a good place to go too as we sit and talk with Brian today. And I hope you have some questions for him as we move along. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Brian Carlos, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Oh, thanks for having me back again.
Did you attend the Packers-Giants game?
No, I wasn't fortunate enough to do that, but I didn't get any frostbite either. So.
Yeah, that's a good thing. What cameras would you bring to an event like that?
I personally have three different cameras in mind, and I'd have to decide which one to carry along. If I were lucky enough to get a sideline pass, I would bring my digital SLR along.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a very, very highly advanced camera, but it's extremely good at doing pictures of action, like sports events. And I would beg and borrow whatever kind of the best lens I could possibly get for it. But if I were on the sideline, I would use that because I would really want to get down there and capture the action. But if I were just stuck up in the stands, that same camera would suit me really well.
Mm-hmm.
I would also really want to bring along a camera like the Fuji S8000. This is like many other point-and-shoots or several others that are available right now. It has an 18x zoom lens. It's just a remarkable amount of zoom lens. And for people who are used to using 35mm cameras, it has the equivalent of a 28mm wide-angle lens, before you zoom it out, all the way out to almost a 500mm lens.
That's amazing. Which camera is that?
This is the Fuji S8000.
Fuji S8000.
Yes.
Boy.
And no matter what camera I brought, though, I would bring along extra batteries. Because when we're working, well, the big deal is this. When we're working in the cold, it's really not going to hurt the camera so much as that the camera's not going to function because the batteries are going to get very cold and not work really well.
Yeah. Well,
so I'd bring extra batteries for my foot warmers and for the camera.
All right. Well, I tell you what, Eugene in Viola has a question for you. So let's go there. Hi, Gene.
Good morning, Larry. I've got a couple 1/16 Bellows cameras and a couple 620 cameras. Now, I haven't been able to get film for those 1/16s for probably 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And those 1/16s go back about 80 years.
Yes.
Those old Bellows. They even had a time delay mechanism on them where you could take time delayed pictures. Can you find film or can you take some other film and adapt it to those cameras? Those 1/16s.
Not to the 1/16s, as far as I know, but your 620 cameras, the film size is actually the same as the roll film that we now sometimes use that we call the 120 format. The reel that's in your camera is a little different size than the reel that comes with that 120 film.
Uh-huh.
And for those who don't have a camera like this, this is basically just a spool, about a 3-inch long spool with film wrapped around it and paper around that so it's not exposed to light. And that film is the same size as 620 film, but the spool is different. So if you have a bunch of old spools, you could easily use the 620s, but I have not yet found a way without physically cutting down film, which would be difficult to use the other ones.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. All right, John in Germantown, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Morning.
This is a little more, I'll tell you, we're going to really stretch his mind today because I'm going from old spool film to software programs for developing raw images. I bought a Canon EOS XTi Rebel. I'm shooting raw, and I was encouraged to do that by a friend's daughter, not realizing that in order to develop those, to manipulate those, you normally need a fairly comprehensive and expensive program. Now, I heard Picasa, too, might be able to allow you to manipulate raw images. Do you know anything about that?
Okay. Not in terms of Picasa, but the answer to that is yes and no. The software program to do it isn't necessarily expensive. Those raw files are basically unprocessed information coming right off of the camera's chip and right onto your memory card. So all those little settings that you often do on the camera, where it asks you to set the white balance and do other things, you know, those long menus. Well, now in post-processing, you get the opportunity to choose those things yourself. Actually, if you're looking for a relatively inexpensive way of doing it, first of all, I haven't tried it myself because I unfortunately use a Nikon camera at home, not a Canon one, but I think you can download Canon's RAW converter for free from their website.
Oh, really? Okay.
I would certainly check it out.
I will.
Second of all, probably the best, most comprehensive editing software program that's really affordable for doing any kind of editing of your photos is Adobe's program, their Photoshop Elements program. Cost you about $100, but it's extremely complete. What they do is they take their full-blown professional editing software and they put all the photographer's tools right into it.
Now, I heard that...
and it includes, by the way... actually, it also includes their RAW converter. You have to it lets you download that, so you don't have to make a major investment. The thing about Adobe's Lightroom program, it does something similar, but it's kind of designed for the person who shoots thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pictures a year.
Okay.
And if you don't do that, you might be over-investing and over-complicating what you need to do.
Yeah.
And Photoshop Elements does just marvelous, marvelous things.
Super. Thank you. You answered my question.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Larry.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for calling. Carolyn in Milwaukee, I believe, is next. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi. I'm working with Camera Obscura for my thesis exhibit at Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design.
Sure.
And I'm wondering if a larger lens will actually create a larger image, or if that's more of a deal with magnification.
No. A larger lens can potentially create a larger image, but what kind of lens are you using on your camera right now?
Actually, double convex magnifying glass.
Okay. Okay.
It's about 4x magnification.
The big trick is then to find to do the same thing with larger pieces of glass. So
okay.
It's not something I've looked at in a while, but you can actually do it. What you're going to need is larger glass to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the diameter of the glass is going to need to be larger, and you're going to sort of achieve the same optical image, but with a larger, wider piece of glass.
Do you know any places where I could find those?
That, unfortunately, I haven't done, because when I got down to trying to do things like that, I took the glass out of the lens and just did it with a pinhole.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Sounds a little complicated.
Yes, that would be, because it might be a little difficult to find that glass, because it has to be ground and shaped in very specific ways, and you need very high optical quality to it, or a fairly high one to it.
Probably a thicker billfold, too.
Something that occurs to me is that Edmund Scientific. One of the things they have always done is had small glass elements. They might actually have fairly large ones for making large images.
So Edmund Scientific.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck, Carolyn. Thanks for calling. John and Gordon, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning, Larry and the guest. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling regarding a lens, an auto zoom lens. It is named K-A-T-A-N, Katana. It's a Japanese lens. And I left it in my car, and I believe it got overheated. And I believe some of the lubrication has leaked onto the interior of the lens, and I use it on a Yashica FX3 camera with an internal light meter, and I think it's fouled it up so that it won't take very good pictures and doesn't record the light properly and so on. I'm wondering, can I get that lens fixed?
I actually think you can. I do a couple of things. First of all, I would shine a flashlight through it, because I'm thinking that the lubricants that help move the lens in the focus and the zoom, and actually help the little aperture blades that are inside it open and close, they may have been affected by the extreme heat. If they haven't leaked out and actually onto the glass elements, I think absolutely you can get it fixed. That's the good news. The bad news is it's a very labor-intensive process to open one of those lenses up and clean it out and re-lubricate it and put it back together, so it might be a little expensive to do. but it can be done. There are certainly a lot of good lenses on the used market, and one of the major lens manufacturers in the photographic industry and in the closed-circuit television industry also is Tamron. They used to make a system of lenses that had no, and they were great for manual focus cameras. They had no lens mount on the back, and you bought the mount separately. They called it their Adaptol system. And so if you look to replace it, you could probably pretty readily do it with one of those lenses.
And that name was?
Tamron, T-A-M-R-O-N.
T-A-M-R-O-N.
But, yes, go ahead.
And I believe this probably cost me $150 originally,
think,
25 years ago.
It's going to cost you more.
I think to repair it is going to be close to the same. I think we're very fortunate here in Madison. We have a company that could do that for us, BDC Camera Repair, right down the street from where we are right now, could repair your lens.
BDC Camera Repair.
Yes.
Tamron Lens. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for calling.
Reminds me of a little something. I used to have a light meter, and I should get another one that actually did, not only had a clock built into it, because once they're electronic, they can do all sorts of things, had a thermometer, too, that would tell you how hot it would record a high and a low temperature for you if you wanted. And I think for the most part, because if you decide to leave your cameras either in your car or in the trunk of your car, it'll let you know how hot it really gets in there.
Okay. Our guest today, Brian Carlos, store manager for the Camera Company on Odana Road in Madison, Wisconsin. Take a look at their website. It's cameracompany.com. And if you have a question, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. No shortage of calls, Brian. Bob in Wauwatosa is next. Bob, hi.
Hi. I'm glad that you took my call. I'm interested in getting into photographing stellar objects. I have a 4-inch reflector telescope, which does not have any camera mount at this time. So I'm wondering, what would you recommend for a camera mount and a camera and digital camera and a software package to maximize what I've got?
Okay, first and foremost, let's go the telescope. As far as camera mount goes, if you've got a pretty good telescope, which I bet you do, the camera manufacturer is going to have a camera mount. What you want to make sure is that you get one that's good for an SLR camera, because I've dealt with a lot of people who do it both with telescopes and with spotting scopes. It's really nice to be able to put a camera onto. But with those, they sometimes try to fit point-and-shoot style cameras on there, but for your best work, especially when doing stellar objects, you're going to want to use an SLR type camera, the ones that have interchangeable lenses. Their picture quality overall is going to be much, much better. And there's two different styles of little chips that act like film in those cameras, a CCD chip or a CMOS type chip. And Canon actually is really good at this because they favor using the CMOS chip, which works at a little cooler temperature.
Oh.
Okay.
And so when you're using extremely long exposures like you will be with stellar objects, it'll do a little bit better. And actually there are companies that will modify those cameras to do nothing but stellar objects. You can't use them for regular photography. But I would look at one of the Canons first and foremost for that.
Okay. It's a CMOS, C-M-O-S?
C-M-O-S.
Okay. And what pixel minimum would you recommend on that?
Well, first of all, I'm actually not going to have to recommend a pixel minimum, because the fact of the matter is all these cameras are so good and they are produced in such a way that any of them that come out right now have the best minimum pixel you could possibly need. And it's going to end up being between 6 and 12 million pixels.
Okay.
And usually which one is better is going to depend on what your final output's going to be, what kind of print you need. Your best bet, though, is probably going to be in the 10 to 12 million pixel range.
Okay, and is there a software program that would be helpful with that?
Well, I was just writing that down because now I have a little extra research to do. This is one of the fun things for doing this show for me, because I now have something new to learn. You're going to need one of the good photo editing software suites. Even that Adobe Photoshop Elements is going to be a good thing to have, even if there is another software program that's going to do it for you. And I'm going to find out if there's anyone in particular that is really good for stellar photography. So next time I'm on the show, please call me back.
All right.
Thank you.
Or actually send me an email and I will if I find something out, let you know.
Okay, I'll do that then.
Thanks a lot for calling. And your web, your email address is on Camera Company.
Yep, it's on cameracompany.com, and it's brian@cameracompany.com.
And coming up, I want to – someone, Bill in Door County, sent us a little email on a place to get old camera film. And so we'll give that. I know we had a call about that, and that whoever called, I forgot now who called about it. But get your pencil ready because we'll give you that coming up next year. Brian Carlos, store manager for the Camera Company. Our guest, Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking cameras and lenses today with Brian Carlos of the Camera Company of Madison. Glad to have you listening in. Bill in Door County sent us an email, and he says for all your old camera film needs, you can go to www.filmforclassics.com, filmforclassics.com. Film for Classics is all one word, and maybe I'll take a look at that as we go along today here and see if I can find a website. In the meantime, give us a call with your question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. John in Milwaukee is next. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I had two technology questions. A couple years ago, I remember reading about a new sensor technology that, if I understood it correctly, it was able to recognize different shades of color. And so, therefore, instead of having to have three sensors to recognize the three different colors, it was able to do it with one particular pixel sensor. And I was wondering what your, if you've heard more about that and the cameras that came out, how they competed with other cameras with the older technology. And then the other technology question I had is that I noticed that there, some of the cameras have SD memory cards and some have XD memory cards. And just recently, there was a newer SD technology called SD high capacity because they're cramming more memory into the cards themselves. And so some of the cameras I've noticed can handle SD cards but not SDHC. And my question was, is there a similar technology change in the XD picture card? Is there some cameras that have XD high capacity, or is there an XD high capacity standard?
Okay. Well, let's start at the end and we'll work our way backwards. First of all, the XD I don't think is going to actually require a what they call an HD or high definite or high density type. So far, the XD cards go up to 2 gigabytes in size, and I don't think that technologically there's any reason they're going to be limited from getting even larger yet. The SD stands for Secure Digital, and those are currently the most common type on the market right now. Most cameras are taking those, and I think most cameras we see coming out will actually use that type of card. The reason they did it is to get above to the HD style, is to get above 2 gigabytes in size. They actually had to sort of use the same size card and reinvent it internally at the very least. And now there are 8 and even 16 gigabyte size cards. And part of the reason we're seeing these exceptionally large ones is that video cameras are starting to use them.
No.
The other thing that also comes along with that is that the HD cards come in several different classes, class 2, class 4, class 6, class 8. And what that really means is how quickly they can write their information to the card. So how quickly the information gets from the card to the camera, or from the camera onto the card. This is, again, particularly important because of video cameras. It's really important there to have that very fast write speed, but it certainly benefits us when we start using them in our film cameras, particularly the SLRs that use them, because those cameras can operate very, very fast, and it helps to have that quick write speed on the card.
Okay. Does that help you out, John?
Yeah, but I was also wondering about the sensors.
Oh.
The sensors, I actually don't think we've seen really filter into cameras yet. I think it's something we're going to come up to very, very shortly, especially with the newer Kodak sensor. Kodak, we always think of in terms of film, but they have been for a long, long time very active in the digital market, and they have basically reinvented the wheel. The sensor that is in all of our commercial digital cameras today is designed off of a Kodak-type sensor, something they designed many, many years ago, back in the 70s, I think it was. They've actually gone ahead and reinvented that, and what it promises to do is that We should get the same kind of color fidelity, but it's going to be much, much more sensitive to light. We haven't really seen it in a lot of cameras yet, if we're thinking of the same type of sensor, but I think we're going to very, very shortly. And I think we're going to see it, maybe we're going to hear about it within the next couple of weeks even.
Oh. Great.
Thanks much.
Yeah, thanks, John, for calling. And Ben in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
See, I just had a question regarding Panasonic Lumix, mm-hmm. the digital camera. And for some reason, I still think that I had to manufacture this, but I'm around me. This is a program I didn't call it and ask. But you take video, it takes a really nice video, but it's unable to zoom.
Okay.
While you're taking the video. Do you know why that is?
Let's just for those, since you were breaking up, you've got a Panasonic Lumix, and when you're in the video mode, it won't zoom.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Well, what do you think, Brian?
Well, most of the compact digital cameras that are designed for still photography and do video also actually are the exact same way. They're designed that way. Part of the reason is they also, along with their video, will do audio. And as digital audio, the audio quality is really, really good. But the big problem is that the microphone is positioned right next to the zoom lens.
Oh.
So if you were zooming it, all you would hear would be the zoom lens moving back and forth.
Oh, I see.
And that's one of the big reasons why they don't.
Oh, okay.
But all your right, camera is you. Actually designed that way, so it's not sort of a fault of your camera. That's the way they are.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Let's see. Pete in La Crosse, I think, is next. So let's go to Pete. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Brian. In regards to mounting that digital camera on the telescope, the item that the caller was looking for, that's called a T-mount.
Sure.
And they come in sizes like inch and a quarter for inch and a quarter eyepieces. So they want to know what size eyepiece he has.
Well, I was thinking he's going to need something specifically to mount to his particular telescope, and then the other option will be, yes, that T-mount, because that will also, on the other end, have his camera mount on it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And those are common enough items. The reason why I call is I've been re-photographing family archive negatives with the digital camera, and I need to move on to a film scanner for 35mm sizes in black and white and maybe some slides, too. What's the level of things for entry-level and consumer-grade film scanners?
Okay. The consumer-level film scanner is still fairly expensive, but it's still state-of-the-art.
Mm-hmm.
And the best on the market right now are made by Nikon. I'm personally kind of interested in finding something that some other brands that might do it very well also, but that would be the Nikon CoolScan series, and their CoolScan 5 is about a $600 scanner, but it is exceptionally good. And it handles only 35mm, but it does black and white, does color transparencies, slides, mm-hmm. and color negatives. And it does it extremely well. Some of the flatbed scanners that are on the market today come with built-in transparency adapters right on their lid. And some of them do an extremely good job also of negatives and slides.
Mm-hmm. And what's the price range that those flatbed scanners run?
Well, you can get pretty good ones starting around $200 and going up from there.
Okay.
All right.
To ones that start almost the really, really good ones are almost as expensive as the film scanners. Their major advantage is if you ever wanted to scan a film format larger than that 35mm, they will let you do that too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you have these all on display in your store?
Yes, we do.
Okay, that's great. We'll see you at your store one Saturday.
All right, Pete.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. We finally have some open lines again at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. By the way, I went to the Film for Classics website, and what they do is precisely what you said, Brian. They purchase film from Kodak in large roll, and then they cut and spool the film using recycled spools and backing paper, if these are available. If not, they use spools and backing paper of their own design and manufacture. So the 620, all 620 film is re-spooled 120 size film, just as you were talking about. And so anyway, there's some possibilities there at Film for Classics if you've got an old camera. And Tanya in Viroqua, I believe, is next. Hi, Tanya.
Hi. I've been listening to your program. I'm looking to buy a new camera, just something easy to use. Right now I have a Canon PowerShot A610, and I'm moving to South America next week for a couple of, well, 2.5 years. And I guess for a gift I got quite a few memory cards, and they don't work in my Canon. And so I've been thinking about getting a new camera anyways and leaving this with my mother. And I guess just wondering if you have any suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there are a lot of great cameras out there today, which is good. But what type of memory card did you get as a gift that won't work in your current camera?
The memory is too big. I think they were 4 gigabytes.
I have a feeling we're going back to our previous one of our previous questions, which is you have the SD type card, but it's an HD, the high capacity type memory card, which doesn't work in all of the older cameras.
Okay.
It will work in any current camera you buy.
All right.
Which is good. And some of the older cameras, I don't believe the 610 will, but it might. There are software updates you can download from the manufacturer and input into the camera that will allow you to use those HD-style cards. From what I've seen, the cameras that eliminate all the big bugaboos that people always complain about that do it the best are often... Canon still does it extremely well. There are a lot of Fuji cameras that do it extremely well.
Would you say the Fuji that you recommended earlier, the S8000, would that be, I'm just looking for something easy that takes good pictures, good zoom.
That would be a very good choice, and I would definitely look at it. Now, because that has such an extremely long zoom lens, it's a fairly large camera by comparison to some of the really compact ones.
Okay.
It's not as big as the SLR cameras. We often talk about those with interchangeable lenses and things like that. But I would even look at one of the smaller Fujis then. Like, they have a camera called the F50 or their F40.
Okay.
Because they're very fast, they get great battery life. Yeah, they'll have a shorter zoom lens, but they'll also be very small. The Panasonic Lumix that the other gentleman who called earlier has, they make a wide range of really nice cameras, too.
The Panasonic Lumix?
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck in South America.
Thank you.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye, Tanya. 2.5 years. All right. Steven in Madison is next. Hi, Steve.
Hello. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I am a recent immigrant from Las Vegas, Nevada, and I am petrified of the moisture in the local area, and I want to know, what do I need to do to winterize my camera so I can go out and take pictures of the beautiful snow and not come in and get my camera full of moisture?
All right. Well, the big deal is, first and foremost, the cold itself is probably not going to hurt your camera.
Good.
As extreme as it gets, it's going to hurt you a lot faster than it's going to hurt your camera. So bundle up. The other thing I always recommend to people, and I always do, is I never store my camera in the car during the winter, which in turn I never do it in the summer either because the car will really, really get hot. So once you are done taking pictures outside, to let it warm up slowly so it stays in the camera bag for a long time. So you're using your digital camera. You take a lot of gorgeous pictures. You want to bring them in and download them quickly. Well, don't do it right away. Actually, and if you really want to do it right away, use a card reader instead of downloading from your camera. It's a little device that's actually going to be really handy for you to have that you plug into your camera and you put your memory card from your camera in it rather than plugging your camera into the computer.
Excellent. Not a problem. I've seen those before. So, yes. Excellent.
And there's a few tricks with those that are really neat because not only do they read the pictures, you can write back onto your memory card from them.
If
you probably have, or if you're going to get a digital frame, a lot of them will display the pictures from a memory card. But what you do is you write them back onto your memory card using that card reader.
Cool.
Yeah, well, look, I'm a raw user. I'm a wedding photographer.
Well, you'll have to convert them and put them back on. And the other thing, by the way, will be when you're shooting outdoors, again, have spare batteries. It's not really hurting the battery, but it's not going to be able to perform up to the cold if you're out there for a long time. What you're going to need to do is open up your jacket and take the one out from your inner pocket and put it in the camera and put that other one and let it back in your coat and let it warm up.
Sounds wonderful. One other, if I may humbly ask, one other question.
Sure.
I was also told that perhaps I should lock my lenses in a Ziploc bag, so that way if there is moisture, the moisture builds up on the bag and not on the lens, especially with the higher priced lenses.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of not a bad idea, but if there's any moisture in the bag, it's going to stay in there with your lenses. So,
Good point.
We also sell, in our store at least, lots of deskant that will absorb that moisture. So if you do put them in a Ziploc bag, stop by and pick up some of that. Because what
I'm
it'll do is...
I'm only a block away, so I'm on my way.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I want to say that I have another family in this town, and I've been to your store before. Your store is very top-rated amongst a lot of professional photographers I know.
Good.
So thank you very much for your advice.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Thanks very much for calling. And, of course, the business is the Camera Company. You can go online to cameracompany.com for another look at everything Brian Carlos and all the gang there at Camera Company have got. And Gail in Madison is next, I believe. So let's go to Gail. Hi, Gail.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, I got a simple question for your guy. Okay, I am planning to get a Rebel XTI camera.
Oh, wonderful.
With
camera.
The 18 to 51 lens, I believe.
Sure, yes.
Okay, and my question is, I looked at that lens through the camera, of course, at one time, and I'm wondering, how does one do close-ups with that camera except by maybe buying another lens?
Well, there's a few options for you. That lens, and actually many of them that come with other brands that are similar to it, the sort of basic kit lens, actually have a decent close focus.
Uh-huh.
And here's where it's going to pay to learn how to manually focus your lens, because you can set it to minimum focus and get really close.
Oh, really?
Other than buying a separate macro lens, the best thing to do is probably what we call close-up diopters. They're small lens diopters that look a lot like filters that you would screw onto the front of the lens, but what they're going to do is they're going to allow your lens to focus a little closer.
Uh-huh.
And they usually come in a set of three, and we keep these in stock all the time. And they're the same. There is a plus one, a plus two diopter, and a plus four. You can actually combine them to get very, very close. And they're actually measured in the same kind of diopters that your glasses are measured in. So if you have reading glasses, they're probably... my guess is a plus one or a plus two diopter. Well, you can actually put the exact same thing on the front of your lens to make it focus a little closer. And
that's
they're relatively inexpensive. Yeah.
That's called lens diopter.
Well, we call them close-up filters is a more common name for them, but the is a diopter is a little more accurate. But
okay.
Okay. Thanks, Gail.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you for your help.
You bet. And Ken in Milwaukee is next. Ken, hello.
Hello. Good morning. I have a question for you, sir. I have quite a few glass plate slides that were taken by my great-grandfather, and many of them of the Devil's Lake area and flowers and
oh,
whatnot.
Beautiful. Wonderful.
Oh, they're quite amazing. He was actually a professor in the Madison College. But anyway, I would like to find a way to preserve these and show them and or reprint them. And is there a recommended method?
Okay. First and foremost, since they're glass plate, it's not necessarily true, but my guess is they're probably all black and white.
Yes. The only ones that are color were hand-touched.
Okay. All right. Well, there used to be, and there were a very small proportion of these things, but it was possible to make actually a color glass plate. But that was a very, very rare thing. And if your grandfather had done that, more kudos to him. I would try a couple of things. Any custom lab can make a print from those.
Okay.
We could actually probably do it through our downtown store. It would take a little experimentation because compared to today's black and white films, there's a big contrast range there. So they have to be handled in a sense a little bit differently. The other option would be, and it's something you might try yourself, we're going to go back to a film scanner, but one of the flatbed scanners that has a transparency adapter built into it, but one that is large enough to do those glass plates because they're much, much larger than a piece of 35mm film that everybody is used to, as big as 4x5 inches or perhaps 5x7 inches and potentially even bigger. If they're 4x5 inches and smaller, there are scanners available that can do that. It'll take a little work, perhaps a lot of work and some experimentation, but it definitely can be done.
Hmm.
By putting them into a scanner, will that degrade the plate at all?
Well, theoretically, yes. But we're exposed because the big deal would be to preserve them. You want to keep them out of the light, you want to keep them cool, and you want to keep them dry. Now,
right.
What you're going to do when you scan them is you expose them to a certain amount of light. theoretically that's going to hurt them, but you're only doing it for a very brief, even though it's bright light, you're only doing it for a very brief amount of time. Even if your scan takes a minute to do, or even 2 minutes to do, compared to their lifetime, that's a very, very short period of time.
Okay.
It's certainly worth trying. You're going to run into a lot of problems because they're glass plates. That glass is going to reflect a lot of light. But it could be a wonderful adventure.
Absolutely. I mean, some of these are so amazing. And to see the Devil's Lake prior to all its current growth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So that's really well worth getting those pictures out for people to see, Ken.
I would think so. Well, thank you very much for your show today.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Eric in Madison, I believe it is your turn. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, boys.
Hi.
I've got a kind of a simple question for you. I just bought a Canon SD750, and I bought a memory card online, and I'm wondering if I did okay. I bought a 4 gig, and it's not really a brand name, but it was very inexpensive, only $10. So my question is there a big difference between a brand name SD card and, a generic or a knockoff?
There are actually some differences between those cards. You may actually have done very well, but what we're going to find is that even though they're solid-state memory, occasionally these things fail.
Okay.
And, for instance, the memory cards we sell at our store have a lifetime warranty, and when something goes wrong, it's an over-the-counter exchange, so you don't have to deal with somebody on the Internet to try to get your... The other thing that happens is those really inexpensive ones. We talked about how the SDHD type cards, those high density SD cards, write really, really fast. Well, a $10 one, even if it's labeled as a very fast card, may not operate that quickly.
Okay.
It may actually be a very slow speed, and sometimes that will even really slow down your camera.
Okay.
But, so something to think about.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, Brian, always a pleasure. Boy, the time flew by.
I know it does. Thanks for having me again, though.
We'll look forward to your next visit. And in the meantime, go online, take a look at cameracompany.com. Cameracompany.com, that's where Brian Carlos finds himself most days. He's the store manager for the Camera Company at 6742 O'Dana Road in Madison. And Brian, you had a final word?
I was just going to say anything that we weren't able to get to that somebody really wants to know, email me.
All right.
Because, again, if I don't know the answer, I love finding out. It gives me a chance to learn a lot of new things.
And you can find his address at cameracompany.com. Thanks again, Brian. Brian Carlos, our guest. And he'll be back, and we'll do this again with him. It was lots of fun with lots of great questions. Tell you what. Climate and weather, the topic coming up. It's the last Monday of the month, and that means our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, will be joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.